I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
What time is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
That's... Yeah, they have asked for that, really.
Well, you can laugh. How's the World Cup?
I'm a little bit of an idealist. But having said that, I want to be like me.
You don't know what you're talking about.
What did you know?
I managed to stay alive for 6 days.
I'm going to leave it there.
I'd say it to your face, and I'll say it to you now.
I'm down to Anfield, and we'll see them, won't we?
What you doing down here, you shawny man?
This is a fun time of year to follow Premier League football. There's a frankly disgusting amount of games to enjoy from now until the end of December, but spare a thought for the managers in the league, three of whom have lost their jobs in the last 12 days with the news that Kike Sanchez-Flores has been sacked again by Watford. And let's be honest, poor Marco Silva had one of those "you're getting sacked in the morning" faces on him at the end of Everton's defeat to Leicester yesterday. But he hasn't been sacked in the morning, that is. He limps on to Wednesday's Merseyside derby.
Well, he might get sacked in the afternoon on, who knows?
He could do, yeah. But that match is one we will cover on today's Second Captain's Podcast. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Owen, how are you?
I'm good. Liverpool are good too. They're relentless at the moment. I guess Silva could be forgiven for wanting to be put out of his misery this afternoon.
What do you think?
Well, they've got a tough run.
Wouldn't he still believe? If you were in his position, wouldn't you believe you could still turn it around?
Maybe not, but that's probably why I'm not a Premier League manager who, I think by their nature, have to believe despite all evidence to the contrary.
Yeah. Well, there's no better time to make a start than this Wednesday.
Wednesday is a glorious opportunity for Marco Silva in a lot of ways. That's how I'd be looking at
it. And the following weekend and then the week after that, most of the games in December, we'll go through their fixture list a little bit later on.
But once you've
pretty
once
tough.
You've proven yourself against the top team of the league, then you've nothing to fear
from points off Liverpool, and then I see what you're saying there. Well, the Merseyside derby during the week, Manchester United, Spurs, all of the football we're going to be covering on Thursday's podcast. Well, we'll obviously discuss anything that happens on Tuesday night on Wednesday also, but there will be a dedicated football podcast on Thursday. Before we head from there to the Liberty Hall Theatre to start the fun at the end of year shows, to listen to the best bits of those live events and to hear Thursday's football pod, you should be signed up to the World Service, which you can do right now on secondcaptains.com. Only costs a fiver a month. Well worth it. This time of the month, the very start, is always the best time to sign up. So that's a hard sell over with, Ken. Please report on some sport.
Well, and there's just so much going on at the moment, it's hard to know where to start. I suppose I should mention that this imaginary Euro tournament that we might be involved in.
Well, no, it is happening.
I don't know yet whether it's going to be happening for us, but if it is, we'll be playing against Poland, Sweden and Spain.
A trip to Bilbao looks like a bit of crack.
Do you think?
Well, the trip. I didn't say the match.
Yeah.
Good city.
Poland and Sweden, though, they're two fun countries to get drawn against, I think. Haven't beaten either of them in a while.
We mullered them 1-0, Ken, as I recall.
So good luck, Bosnia and Northern Ireland in that group. Or Northern Ireland, I should say.
Anyway, I suppose we should start with another returning character of days gone by to the Premier League, which is Freddie Ljungberg.
There's an extra G in there that I didn't realise. You know, when you start checking how names are spelled.
You didn't realise until this weekend, or?
Yeah, the middle G.
Ljungberg.
I thought it was. I thought it was. I'm not going to go through the spelling. I just didn't know that G in the middle was there.
I don't even know. I'm not sure what to say to that.
Why am I talking about this?
Yeah,
really, really helping to prod the conversation along here today.
Freddie Ljungberg comes in with Arsenal DNA, which is what Josh Krunk said about him. It's one of the things that he's got going for him. Was it Scholes said he was disappointed?
Yeah, that he wasn't wearing a suit.
He was disappointed because Freddie Ljungberg turned up in like a cable knit sweater. What does he think he's doing? He should be wearing a suit and tie, shirt and tie.
I've seen Herbert Chapman at that.
That's what Scholes he said anyway. But
Top Hat and Tails, Herbert Chapman was in, of course.
So what did Freddie Ljungberg do? He brought Granit Xhaka back into the team. He continued with Mesut Ozil in the team. He played two strikers, Lacazette and Aubameyang. He left Kieran Tierney on the bench. And everyone was kind of like, what the hell is going on, Freddie? What are you doing? I thought we wanted change.
Evolution, not revolution.
He left Nicolas Pepe on the bench for the entire game, bringing on young players in place of the £72 million club record signing. And afterwards said, yeah, he's a good player, but, you know, I have to make decisions based on what I see in training every day. So it's, it didn't sound too good. I can say that young Joe Willock, chosen by Freddie Ljungberg to start this game, says that Ljungberg is a says he's very we believe in him. He told us to play with happiness, but he also said that Emery was a very good manager. So, you know,
it's nearly as boring as my what superfluous G and Ljungberg conversation.
What actually happened was a somewhat lucky 2-2 draw for Arsenal. I mean, okay, they did. Well, no, I mean, I was about to say they did dominate the game, and they kind of did, but they also could have lost the game very easily. Norwich had a couple of missed chances. Arsenal got a penalty, got the chance to retake a penalty, which Aubameyang had missed first time around because of some encroachment in one of these sort of VAR decisions where the Norwich player who ran into the box had fractionally encroached, which enabled Aubameyang to slot the second attempt at his penalty and then shush Tim Krul in the goal. And he scored a second goal as well, Aubameyang. But, you know, it seems as though the Ljungberg, you know, I was surprised that lots of people were angry with the team. Oh, what are you doing? It's as though he was continuing the sort of what are regarded as being Emery's delusions. Ljungberg trapped in these delusions. Why? Maybe the problems at Arsenal go a little deeper than only Emery.
Maybe, you know, if Freddie Ljungberg was to get the job full time, I'm sure he would try to get some players brought in that would suit whatever vision he has, but he is working with the players who are there at the moment, so I think he might have to cut him a bit of slack.
I think so. I mean, he will get cut a bit of slack for now anyway, although it's still obviously unclear as to whether, I mean, I think he has a chance obviously of being the next sort of permanent manager, but there are other names in the frame. Second in the league at the moment is Leicester City. A last-minute victory against Everton yesterday. Another goal by Jamie Vardy, the top scorer in the league. And another 3 points banked by Brendan Rodgers, who you know, I think is really cutting a sort of a magisterial figure these days.
He did a brilliant job of looking calm on the sideline as that VAR check went on for the last-minute winner. Then as soon as it is given, he's gone absolutely crazy. Yes.
Yeah, well, did you see Tyrone Mings at Old Trafford? Similar kind of situation where he'd scored it. We'll get to that game in a bit. But he'd scored a goal that sort of looked offside because there was so many players so far away from him. He was so far behind that defence. Only then you saw Brandon Davis had played everybody onside. But Mings' reaction was not to celebrate at all. And you could see his teammates going, were you offside? And he's like, I don't know. I don't know. We just have to wait and see. I think it's okay, but, you know, I'm not going to celebrate until I know that it's a goal.
There's no point trying to bluff that weird offside thing they do in the VAR centre with the lines and so on.
No.
That doesn't take in Tyrone Mings' facial expression, so you may as well just say, I don't have a clue.
I honestly don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But, okay, so Brendan Rodgers, after the game, obviously as the victorious manager, he was speaking to Jeff Shreves, and we'll hear a little bit of that here.
You have been mentioned in dispatches, another club currently looking for a manager. Can you clarify one thing for us? Is there actually a clause in your contract that if a club meets it, you can go?
No, that, listen, there probably is in most managers' contracts, Jeff. Listen, it's all hypothetical, all these types of situations. I think for me at this moment, we've had a brilliant win today. As I said, we came back really, really well. My focus is very much with Leicester, and like I said, I made a change 8-9 months ago, and I came into here, and I'm been so happy since I come into here to work with the players, and I feel we still have a lot of work to do. So, so like I said, most managers' contracts will have something in that, but for me, my only concentration on is Leicester.
Second in the table right now, can you achieve your ambitions with Leicester City?
Yeah, listen, I've been very fortunate in my career, Jeff, to work with some brilliant clubs and some great institutions, and coming to here, this was an ambition to come to here to help the club arrive into the top six, and and for us, you know, everything's been great since we've worked together. We know there'll be bumps along the way, but for me, my ambition at this very moment in time.
At this very moment in time. Of course, they are second in the table. I mean, the job was to help them arrive into the top six, the champions of 2016. But
here we are.
Well, second in the table right now. And I mean, I did think that was interesting from Rodgers. Like, just it's all hypothetical. Well, it's not hypothetical if you don't want to go to Arsenal. You know, it's not hypothetical if you say, I'm not going. I only took this job in, when was it? March, April, that he actually arrived at Leicester.
February, I think, was it?
Was it that early?
Yeah, I think it was.
I mean, it was, you know, it's like, to, you know, in the second half of last season anyway. So he's not been there yet for a full season. And already to move on, I think would be a mad thing for him to do at this point, especially as Leicester City look a lot better than Arsenal at the moment. There's no denying that Arsenal are a bigger club than Leicester and have more potential, I suppose, to put together a powerful team, a process that could take some time. You know what I mean? Mm. And for Rodgers, who, one thing that you can say about Rodgers is that he hasn't skipped much from club to club in this way. I mean, he was at Reading briefly enough, but then he did a little bit of time at Swansea, you know, got a move to Liverpool, was there for 3 and a bit seasons, went to Celtic, you know, and had them playing good football, and left, okay, in his third season, but had already won 2 leagues. It wasn't like it was a revolving door thing. Oh, there's a better offer, I'm out of here. So to skip on.
Well, Celtic fans do feel that's what it was.
I know, but I thought at the time maybe he could have finished out that season as well. That would have been a better way to leave. But, you know, he obviously felt otherwise. And he had at least been there, won quite a lot of stuff, won 2 trebles, you know.
Mm. And it turns out there was actually a benefit to starting at Leicester when he did, because he had a relatively pressure-free end to that season. They weren't going to get relegated. They weren't going to get the Champions League or anything. And you get to essentially imprint your style. So it's ready to go. Pre-season, get a couple players in, and off you go.
Yeah, and look, so it's gone really well. Now, if he got this opportunity, sure, it's a bigger club. Like, I mean, if Arsenal, if he had a choice between Arsenal and Leicester when he was at Celtic, if they'd offered him the job at that point, I'm not saying they have offered him the job already, but if they had offered him the job, I'm sure he would have chosen Arsenal over Leicester. However, once you're the Leicester manager, you can't just up and leave. So it shouldn't be hypothetical from his point of view. You know,
you can up and leave, though. Like, is it that ludicrous for him to think this is my only shot potentially getting back into the very biggest clubs in England, one of the very biggest clubs, and at the moment things are going so well at Leicester
that this is the I'm at the highest point
now, exactly.
I'm at the peak. I need to cash out. Well, you know, in a way that would be a pessimistic way for Rodgers to look at his situation.
Very much would be, yeah.
You know what I mean? There's a bit like I would appreciate, like, say for instance, compare Rodgers to Pochettino at the moment. Pochettino out of work, lots of Arsenal fans saying, get Poch in. That'd be great. That would really be one in the eye for Spurs. But apparently, this idea seems to be quite popular with Arsenal supporters. Get him in, even though he used to manage Tottenham until 5 minutes ago. But if I was Pochettino, I might be kind of looking at this going, do I want to manage Arsenal? I mean, aside from the fact that I've been managing Tottenham for 5 or 6 years, and this would be, like, you know, obviously it would be controversial. It would be
a strain on his friendship with Harry Kane.
It would be. Although Harry Kane's an Arsenal supporter, you know, if you scrape enough layers off, you'll find a little Arsenal fan in there. What I mean is, his situation reminds me a little bit of, say, remember when Luis Suarez wanted to join Arsenal when they put in the bid of £40 million pounds plus one pound, and he was like, oh, I want to join, but essentially because he wanted to get out of where he was, Liverpool, and Steven Gerrard is speaking to him and saying, look, don't join Arsenal. It's a waste. Honestly a waste of your ability. If you wait, if you play well for one more season, you can join Real Madrid or Barcelona. Don't go there. And he eventually agreed to do this. Whether it was, how much of it had to do with taking those points on board, how much of it had to do with John Henry flouting the contract law surrounding his release clause, no one will ever know. However, it did seem as though that was part of his thinking. It was like, this is a move, but is it a move that I really want at this time? You know, for Pochettino to go to Arsenal would seem like, well, what was the point? You know, it's not the career progression you'd been hoping for.
But for Rodgers, it might be.
For Rodgers, it might be. Rodgers is different from Pochettino. He didn't have a playing career. And someone who doesn't have that, I think, has a tendency to maybe be a little bit more ruthlessly ambitious in terms of climbing the managerial ladder. Because, you know, like, you've had to fight pretty hard to get to the point that you're at. You know what I mean? You have to recognize and seize the opportunities when they come. But sometimes an opportunity comes a bit too soon. You know, he could join Arsenal. The squad is all over the place. You know, we were speaking about it on Friday. There aren't many teams that you can pick, looking at the Arsenal players, that you'd feel good about sending out into the Premier game. Whereas with Leicester, you've got like a really good structure. You've got players who make sense. A couple of injuries could change the situation at Leicester, obviously. But at the moment, they make a lot of sense on the field.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're Brendan Rodgers, looking at the top six that everyone thought would be the top six at the start of the season. I mean, Man City are pretty well run. Liverpool are well run. And then you've got Chelsea, United, Spurs and Arsenal. And Rodgers thinks this is going to be his only chance to take over one of those four clubs. I mean, I have a feeling that there will be a few more managerial vacancies between now and the end of next year.
Yeah, I know, but will Leicester continue to be going as well? Will he be seen as the hot property at the moment? That was my point.
If Leicester finish sixth this year, it's still a brilliant...
If Leicester finish sixth this year, it'd be pretty disappointing. It'd be disappointing where they're at right now. Like, yeah. Leicester could get into the Champions League this season. Is it more likely than not? Maybe not quite, but it's not far off that. Mm. And that would be... Rodgers could say, look, everywhere I've gone, I've been a success. I was at Swansea. Mm-hmm. I had them playing the football of the gut, death by football, at the Liberty Stadium. Took them into the Premier League. Liverpool nearly won the league. Celtic trebles all over the place, and Leicester into the Champions League. This is a guy who's going to be considered for jobs as they come up. So I don't think there's any need for him to snatch at this one.
Yeah.
If it does become available, which maybe it won't. I mean, elsewhere in new manager news, another win, another 3-2 for Jose Mourinho. Some nice quotes by Heung-Min Son. He is very kind. He's smiling, making jokes. I like it. The results have changed a lot. The positive vibe. Everyone is positive before games. He is doing a great job, and we are really happy with him. That's Son on his new manager, Jose Mourinho, who had the ball boy in, you know, the squad. Have you seen that? Remember the ball boy who gave the ball to Aurier, was it? For their goal against
in the Champions League game.
It was really quick, quick thinking ball boy rewarded with dinner with the squad. And apparently the ball boys and ball girls are all going to be involved.
Ah.
It's a family. It's a huge, you know, Jim Jones family. It's a huge family. A lot of people are going to be involved. And 6 points now behind Frank Lampard. Who lost again. Frank Lampard, Chelsea, lost to West Ham. Now, Tammy Abraham's missing. Giroud played, was pretty poor. But there's a worrying pattern developing here with Frank Lampard's team where they're only losing the big games. Now, is West Ham a big game? Yes, if you're a Chelsea fan, and yes, if your name is Frank Lampard. if you were to ask him to write down the five opponents he doesn't want to lose to at the beginning of the season, he's probably going to choose the teams that are going to be around Chelsea in the table or above Chelsea in the table and West Ham. And yet there it is. They win at Stamford Bridge for the first time in nearly 20 years.
Deservedly so. And this was the Premier Sports game, of course, at the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
And Chelsea were poor.
They were.
In the second half in particular. They didn't offer a huge amount. And like West Ham are weak enough. But look, like world beaters on Saturday.
I know. And they've been going so badly, like West Ham, for... You know, I mean, Lampard before the game was all, you know, I've played again in games where the atmosphere can turn and, you know, form goes out the window and all this kind of stuff. But to lose to them at Stamford Bridge is sickening.
Well, he said afterwards, maybe this is the kind of thing, you know, we've been getting too much praise. I don't like praise. And like, now they'll know that it's not going to come easy to them, all this kind of stuff. So I suppose he's putting a positive spin.
You might prefer praise to the alternative.
Praise isn't the worst thing.
Yeah. I mean, now he can feel the hot breath of Jose on his neck. And now Jose is going to have to chase down this man, his football son. Mm. He's going
man
to
who
have
he
to,
once embraced naked in the shower.
He didn't embrace, he pointed at
Lampard. I thought there was an embrace as well, no?
I don't think he put the hands on Lampard. He just pointed at him and said, "You're the best player in the world. I want you to know that," as Lampard glistened out of the shower. Now, Chelsea played Tottenham on the 22nd of December. Christmas tidings. I mean, I think this could develop into a pretty interesting subplot as Mourinho has to kind of go to work on Frank
via Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. He gets to go to work on Ole on tomorrow. No, Wednesday night.
Wednesday is Jose versus Ole. That's gonna be interesting. I mean, City, Newcastle. Could City get dragged into this? They're kind of. I'm reluctant to say that this was kind of more evidence of the decline at that City that we were talking about last week, because this was such a freakish result. It was such a freakish outcome. There's no way that Newcastle should have come out of this game with anything, you know. And they scored two chances that weren't chances, and City missed a bunch of chances. And then it ended up 2-2. I mean, it is a little... Like, City... You know, if they don't have Aguero, I think they're going to struggle sometimes to put away chances in games like this. Gabriel Jesus is a little bit... Gabriel Jesus, I remember when he arrived, and for his first year, more or less, at Man City, he seemed to do nothing but turn up unmarked at the far post and tap in easy goals, and seemed like, wow, this guy just has an unbelievable sense of positioning. He's just materializing in the right place at all times. That's stopped happening. And... He looks a little bit weighed down, I think, by the pressure of having to be... Aguero's injured at the moment, so it's him. But he kind of wilting a little. Like, there's 15 crosses by Kevin De Bruyne in this game, which is a lot even for him. I mean, he scored an absolutely unbelievable goal.
The type of goal that City don't normally have to resort to, though, Ken. Mm. I wonder, was Pep looking at that going, I don't want players shooting from out there. Yeah. We've got to work it in. We've got to get to the byline.
You know, I'll
cut
take
it back,
it, but
yeah, it's
that's
like to
not
him,
what
that's
I
a lot like
that's
a long,
not Man City.
It's like a long ball, route one goal.
Yeah, that's not the club I've built.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought he would have been happy enough. Mm. Actually.
Most people would. Most football people would.
But meanwhile, Liverpool were winning a game, well, quite easily against Brighton until Alisson got sent off, and I think Liverpool were maybe lucky that Aaron Connolly had come off at that stage, because I thought he was pretty lively in this game. But obviously it was two goals by Van Dijk to put Liverpool ahead, and then Alisson got sent off, and suddenly with 10 men they're trying to defend against the team. Now, the goal that Brighton scored was a bit of a strange one, in that Lewis Dunk scored it from a quickly taken, they've been setting it up for a while, but because Adrian was coming on, it sort of took a while to get going. Then he just sort of said to Martin Atkinson, "Can I take this?" "Yeah, go for it." And like passed it into the net. It kind of looked like an absurd goal. But there was also this issue of the Brighton players standing in the wall, which you're not supposed to be allowed to do. A rule which everybody just forgot. everyone just forgot the rule. I didn't see the Liverpool players even complaining about it.
Was that one of the new ones that was brought in?
Yeah. Oh, okay. So the attacking players cannot be within 1 yard of the defensive wall. If players set up in a defensive wall for a free kick, you know this kind of age old thing of the attacking players getting involved in the wall or pushing their way into it or trying to push the wall out of the way or jump out of the way to create a hole in the wall, all this kind of stuff. They brought in a rule to stop that from happening.
Yeah.
You have to be more than a meter away or whatever from the wall. And clearly this wasn't the case, but everyone just forgot.
Because there were some teams circumventing that at the start of the season. Now that you mentioned it, I think they were standing in front of the wall. You know, so they must have been, say it was a yard or whatever away, but they were standing, say three of them would be, I can't even remember what games I'm thinking of here, but I vaguely recall this happening. Maybe I've just invented this entire scenario. Jeez, I'm a footballing genius. That's what you should do. Just have a full wall in front of the wall behind so none of them can see.
Mm.
Make sure you have your tallest players in the wall. They all duck at the right time. The defensive ball doesn't even have a freeze being taken. Bang. In off the post. Go.
Yeah.
Sorry, go bang.
Bingo, bang. Well, it was obviously very... it was good stuff from Van Dijk, who it looks like isn't going to win the Ballon d'Or. I mean, there have been... You don't know... There's been like a leak purporting to be, you know, showing that Messi wins the Ballon d'Or for his sixth overall victory, meaning he'll probably finish ahead of Ronaldo on five.
Ah, they don't care about that.
At this point. Probably won't be Van Dijk. Van Dijk is the top scoring defender in the Premier League over the last two seasons. But who do you think is second?
What's the question?
Virgil van Dijk has scored 7 Premier League goals since the beginning of last season, which is more than any other defender.
Who's second?
Shane Duffy.
Well, I was going to say Lewis Dunk because you mentioned him earlier.
No, Kieran is halfway to the correct answer. Shane Duffy is one of the two players, the two defenders on 6 goals.
Oh.
Hmm. He's the other top scorer, the other defender who scored 6 Premier League goals since the beginning of last season. I'll give you a hint. He scored again yesterday.
Matt Doherty.
Can you believe it? The two players behind Van Dijk as the top scoring defenders in the Premier League are Duffy and Doherty. This is remarkable.
It is. It is truly remarkable.
Got one in Europe during the week as well. Matt Doherty.
He did.
I just kind of glanced up. Didn't even realise the game was on. I think I was in the office with you at the time, Ken. Glanced up. Oh, Wolves are playing Europa League. There's Matt already making one of those ghosting runs he makes from those sort of late runs from inside right type position that defenders never seem to realise are coming.
Yeah.
Boom, bang, header, go.
And also, I should mention that he celebrated, he kind of dedicated it to Benikofobi. He was one of a lot of players actually who were sort of expressing their sympathy with Benikofobi, whose daughter, 2-year-old daughter, died on Friday. There was a lot of other players who evidently have been his teammate in the past. Doherty is one of those. I did see there was a nice story, speaking of Wolves. Adama Traore, he scored a good goal in that European game you were talking about for Wolves against Braga. There was quite a good story about him. It was David Ornstein writing The Athletic. Traore did play with Middlesbrough, who were managed by Tony Pulis. You wouldn't have thought a classic Adama Traore type manager, you know, in the sense that like he doesn't play the kind of football that you would necessarily associate with Tony Pulis' teams. However, you know, if you think about it a bit more, he's a player who can do magic with the ball, you know, in terms of dribbling, like the craziest, the most off the charts dribbling numbers, you know, of anybody. He's essentially a slightly... He dribbles more, slightly less successfully than Messi, but like there's no one else near them. You wouldn't have thought this was necessarily Pulis' kind of guy, but the one thing you do have to say about Adama Traore when you look at him is that for a dribbly guy, he does have a physique like a rugby league player. If you are going to have a dribbly guy on your team, and it always helps to have at least one, why not this guy? Tony Pulis loved this guy. Tim Sherwood, nah. So as Ornstein reports, Sherwood lost faith in Adama Traore at Aston Villa very quickly. When Traore joined Middlesbrough the following year, Pulis decided he was the most talented player in his squad but needed a lot of coaching. So Pulis would often play Traore on whichever wing was closest to the dugout in the first 45 minutes, talking him through the game, when to dribble, when to pass, when to position himself, then switch him at the break to continue offering guidance in the second half. They developed a good relationship, still speak often on the phone. He was also in the manager's office regularly during the week on what Pulis called the naughty chair to go through his errors. He's a lovely lad, said Pulis. Great standards and values. Not big time at all. He just lacked a little bit of self-belief. And a little bit of belief in people who were in charge of him. He'd make a mistake and look across to see if you were shouting at him. He was like a coward cat who had been smacked too many times. We had to get that out of him. Apparently he would wake up in the middle of the night screaming, Adama, Adama. I'm really pleased it was a boy's name and not a girl's name, or my wife would have killed me, said Tony Bielis. You can just imagine, like, actually being the kind of man who would, like, nurse an injured hedgehog back to health. Like, put some straw in a shoebox and, like...
A little matchstick splint.
Bread and milk.
For an injured leg.
He completely would be that type, in my opinion. But, okay, so we should get on, I think, at this point to talking about Jack Grealish.
Why not? What a goal.
How good was Jack Grealish in this game at Old Trafford? He is unbelievably good. It's a good thing that James Maddison was playing at the same time, or this would have, he just wouldn't have been able to go on after watching this. The performance of his double, the superior performance of Grealish. I mean, so you know, the stats about him being the most fouled player in the league, and you can see why this is. It's because he's one of the best in the league at holding onto the ball under pressure. Or, like, he takes the ball and it doesn't matter to him. He never gets worried about an opponent getting too close because he kind of feels as though they're not going to get the ball off me. Like, he's got utter confidence in terms of his ability to hold onto the ball, to either just to draw players and pick a pass to a teammate, or to just go past the player who's tried to come and take the ball off him. The goal that he scored was absolutely amazing. He even won a compliment from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
A fantastic goal. I think he hit one of them, you know, them corners that I've hit a couple of times.
Mm. I was a bit surprised.
As in the corners of the net?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, one of those top corners that Ollie used to.
Rare humble brag by Ollie.
Yeah.
Not really a humble brag, just an outright brag.
It was,
brag,
it was
say.
A brag. It was a yeah. brag more than a humble brag. I mean, Solskjaer... You know, I mean, I don't know. I'd be interested to hear what you make of it, Owen. I mean, there's lots of stats going out around about Solskjaer because, you know, the record is pretty bad. 26 points from 22 games since he got the job fully, like since he got the job full time. So, you know, Daniel Taylor, writing about this, points out the last 22 league games for Jose Mourinho, 35 points sacked. Louis van Gaal, 37 points and won the cup. Sacked. David Moyes, 36 points from the last 22 matches, obviously sacked. Pochettino, 25 from his last 22, just one less than Solskjaer. Obviously, he was sacked. And it's kind of like, you know, so they've got four wins in the league out of 14 matches this season. You know, like these statistics are really, really not good. And yet, it seems as though he's still on pretty solid footing. Now, obviously, the next two games are against Tottenham and Manchester City. So things could be... I mean, I saw Simon Hughes even looked at this and said... he had a statistic about how after 14 games, Solskjaer... of this season, Solskjaer's United have fewer points than Roy Hodgson at Liverpool, which was like a total disaster. You know, like the season is a complete, it's like a historic shame, and it looks as though the club is going into liquidation at the same time. You know, and still had more points than this after 14 matches. So at what point does this become...
Give it gigs it to the end of the season.
Well, at what point does it become an issue? I mean, what's your...
Well, it is an issue.
You surely. Think it is?
Yeah. Every team that isn't in the bottom three have won four or more games in the Premier League this year.
Yeah, it's this
the only teams that have won fewer games than Manchester United are Southampton, Norwich City, and Watford, the three bottom teams.
Although I think is there something like 10 teams who have won four matches? It's kind of weird.
It is. There's been an outrageous amount of draws in the Premier League this year.
The only two things that are saving at the moment are this point we've made a million times: this investment in youth, and the fact that some of those other managers you mentioned didn't look like they were building anything new. So all you could go on were results. Whereas when you are putting young players into the team, you at least buy yourself a bit of patience, maybe. You know, it's obviously the club legendary status that goes with Solskjaer, but also the fact that his mates in the media,
his mates
in the media. Well, like, even Roy Keane seems to not have a bad word to say about Odegaard. They all love him.
Oh, you mean the players? You mean the ex-players?
The ex-players, yeah. Mm. I'm not talking about journalists. I'm talking about ex-players. He just seems so popular amongst those, I would say, quite powerful ex-players, as in powerful figures in the media, that he's not getting the hammering that somebody else might get with the same results.
Well, I think there's a few things going on. I mean, number one, the fact that he is playing, you know, a lot of younger players.
Yeah.
Does I think get him some credit?
No, that's what I'm saying. It does, yeah.
You know, and he, what was the way he put it? I'm not managing for myself. I'm managing for Man United. That
but
was
you know,
the way
you can win
it.
With those young players, though. Frank Lampard's playing similarly young teams, and he's winning with them.
Frank Lampard has got a midfield of World Cup finalists, World Cup winner N'Golo Kanté, World Cup finalist, God, what's his name? Kovacic.
Kovacic, yeah.
No, but it was his first
name. Oh, Mateo.
Mateo. Yeah. Why do I was thinking Darko. Darko Kovacevic, was he the player from... Look, there's just too many players in my head. Mm-hmm. Was he Real Sociedad, Xabi Alonso, Nihat, those guys.
I'll give you the third midfielder you're going to mention. Mateo Jorginho, Kovacic. Maybe?
Jorginho, I know Jorginho. What I'm saying is that is... He's got like a bunch of world-class midfield players to kind of run this team that he has. And he's got young central defenders, a young striker in Abraham... guys like Pulisic or whatever, but Ole Gunnar Solskjaer does not have a midfield unit of that quality. He's got Pogba, who's been injured for ages, you know, he's just been, what's going on with him? No one's really sure. He says hopefully he'll be back this month. McTominay may be back this month. Not that McTominay is necessarily a transformative player in my opinion, but you know, Fred, I mean, I think it is something, Owen, that we talked about when we did the podcast on transfer deadline day. What are Manchester United doing? How are they're going to start the season? They've got about five midfielders. You know, we were saying this.
They had a lot of centre halves at the time.
They had like 14 defenders or something and like five midfielders. It just seemed like, this is nonsense. What are you doing? Mata was playing kind of in midfield the other day. So the mistakes, I guess, were made at that time. Like, they've left themselves very short. Ed Woodward's interview with United We Stand, the second half of it appears to now be out, and there's just a couple of quotes doing the rounds of it, and he seems to be talking a bit of gibberish. It's a multi-year squad evolution analysis. It's hard enough to get three players done in a transfer window, says Woodward, who has, in past transfer windows, signed 6-7 players, as everyone points out. To get 6 or 7 done is extremely difficult if you're getting proper talent. So whether that's a compliment to his own success in pulling off this very difficult thing, or is he saying that the talent he signed wasn't proper? Either one of those things. He has done that before in the past. If you choose to churn every player because they're not good enough and you're not extending contracts, you are putting yourself at risk of execution. What? I mean, the only way I can make sense of that is that he means by you're putting yourself at risk of execution, he means you could lose your job.
Mm.
Is that what he means? Is that
you got to presume so?
Yeah,
maybe a business term.
I don't think. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, he's a gold standard businessman. Maybe they use terms in a slightly different way to how we would use them.
Yeah,
execution to us sounds like, you know, guillotine.
Well, you do. With him, it's just you like, do often hear somebody was terminated. As opposed to just their contract was terminated.
Nah, their contract.
No.
No one.
You know,
you hear it about people. People have been terminated.
Yeah,
you do.
In the business world, Murph, you got to start reading the, you know, Financial Times there.
I'm really not sure about this Solskjaer situation. He doesn't. I feel like he doesn't really inspire much confidence. You know, I don't. I kind of feel he's a little bit wooden. You know, that a lot of the managers who have been successful were showing signs of it at this point. Whereas with his, you know, he was being asked, for instance, like he says after the game, you know, we are Man United, we just need to go on a run. We, you know, if these lads get a run of 3-4, the confidence will flow, you know. And the question was like, you've won 6 of your last 22 games. Like, there's no evidence you can win 4 matches in a row. Like, what gives you that confidence? And he's
the most famous club in the world.
Well, he says, you know, we're closer to winning than losing these matches. You know, these games are going to be big. Obviously, the Tottenham,
this one, yeah.
this is big because the Tottenham game is very big, not just because of all the kind of soap opera Jose stuff, but because they are one of the real, you know, if Manchester United are to have any chance of going on this run and getting towards the sort of top four, this is one of the teams they need to finish ahead of.
Mm-hmm.
And beating Tottenham, if they beat Tottenham, then they would go ahead of them, I think. That's the situation. They're 2 points behind at the moment.
We could double check the table.
Yeah, I think that is the situation. So these games are
big. 2 points behind, yes.
Yeah. That would put a slightly different gloss on things. It's all about whether people view this optimistically or not. I mean, because enough bad results and everybody just ends up saying, look, this isn't working, it's got to change. So what else? We should mention Barcelona. They were playing Atletico Madrid last night. It was a pretty bad game. Atletico Madrid dragging Barcelona down to their level pretty successfully. Barcelona's level isn't really that much above Atletico Madrid these days until Lionel Messi got the ball in a promising position and scored one of his best goals. I mean, an amazing goal. It kind of simple, like a very distinctively Lionel Messi goal, but incredible that he can still do these types of things. Again, another example of this, I forget which player it was who said that the thing that impressed him, it was a former teammate, I'm trying to remember which one, said that the thing that most impressed him about Messi was his ability to actually get to the ball before his opponent. Like for a kind of a small guy, it was impossible to sort of, if he saw that the ball was there, he's going to reach it before you do. He's going to somehow manage to elbow you out of the way and get to the ball first. This is an example of him doing that to a much stronger player, Thomas Partey, the Atletico defensive midfielder. He knocks the ball past him to Suarez and then runs, and Partey tries to run with him, but there's just no way that he can get to the ball ahead of the unbelievably slow and now aged Lionel Messi, who gets there with enough poise still to rifle the ball into the bottom corner from outside the box from the Suarez layup. It was absolutely unbelievable.
Beautiful to see.
I mean, I have been watching a good bit of Messi this weekend because Barcelona brought out their new documentary on Rakuten TV.
Oh, yeah.
Their Japanese sponsor.
Any good?
Yeah, well, one of the things I really liked about it was, can you identify the... you don't hear the narrator of this all the time, but he does come in with a few lines, and can you tell me who this is?
Barca travels to Liverpool with a sizable 3-0 advantage from the first leg. It is a unique opportunity to once again play in the final of the Champions League. Salah and Firmino, two of Liverpool's stars, are injured, but the English have something very important in their favour. They are playing in their stadium, Anfield.
That is important. That is.
Who?
It's Ken Early doing his Champions League weekly voice.
No, it's not.
It does sound like that, doesn't it?
No, that is twice Academy Award nominated actor.
Hang on, do you know this, Murph?
Yeah, I did get, he played it for me downstairs before came up, but yes, yeah. I do know.
It's John Malkovich.
Oh, shit.
It's John Malkovich. I got that. Will we hear a little bit more, Malco?
Jurgen Klopp is one of the best coaches in world football. His teams have reached the very top, but there is still one title that remains elusive. The Champions League. Last year, he took Liverpool to the final, but lost. This year, he is determined to be champion.
Why is he talking like that?
Elusive.
He sounds like... I thought he sounded like Robo voice.
Yeah, that's exactly what he sounds like.
What would the great scenes of his career have been like if he had acted that way in, for instance, Dangerous Liaisons?
Do you mean you don't love me anymore?
It's true, my love had great difficulty outlasting your virtue. It's beyond my control.
It's that woman, isn't it?
I have been deceiving you with Emily, among others. It's beyond my control.
Why are you doing this?
There is a woman, not Emily, another woman. A woman that I adore. And I'm afraid she is insisting that I give you up. It's beyond my control.
Liar!
I mean...
Oscar goes too.
That's still pretty good, in fairness.
Malkovich, seriously, like, it was the worst acting I've seen in this week in a football-related publication. And I watched Liverpool FC's Standard Chartered ad in which they resurrect Bob Paisley, starring Ian Rush and Jordan Henderson.
Bob, you gave me my very first Liverpool shirt, and it changed my career. It's a privilege to give this shirt in your honour.
It's even got your name on it, Bob.
even got your name on it, Bob. That's Jordan Henderson. Like, this is so weird.
That's Jordan Henderson acting John Malkovich into a cocked hat, as the old saying goes.
I mean, it's like some room, I guess, at Anfield, and there's Liverpool legends, past and present, Irishman, aging technology. I don't know if they're using that for Terry McDermott or whatever. Roy Evans is there, possibly making more money off this cameo appearance in the Standard Chartered ad that he did in his entire 30-year career at Liverpool. Maybe that's why he agreed to do it. Rushy, Hendo, Joe Gomez looking pretty puzzled. Milner with the rictus grin on Milner's face has to be seen to be believed. And then Bob Paisley, apparently resurrected, steps forward wordlessly and surveys the scene. And Rushy gives him a shirt. This is how everyone in the room reacts. They give him a shirt. And then he says, thanks. It's like, Bob, we thought you were gone.
God, football has gone crazy.
But was the acting as bad as... I mean, I still think that the best acting in a football ad was when Man United were doing the ad for Casillero del Diablo.
Yeah, yeah.
Guys, we have a problem. The boss said that a new devil is arriving.
What?
Is he well known?
Famous throughout the world.
I'm sorry?
What do they say about him? They say he is a legend.
Sorry, hang on. That was Rooney.
Talking to Giggs.
Giggs. But like nothing about it makes sense. It's like, they say the new devil is arriving. Is he well known? What?
Yeah, is he well known?
And then you hear this voice, which is apparently, I mean, it comes out of Patrice Evra's mouth. Can we hear Patrice Evra's quote?
Famous throughout the world.
I'm sorry, can we hear that one more
time? Famous throughout the world.
That is not Patrice Evra.
No, it's not. It's the devil famous. Speaking through Patrice Evra.
Famous throughout the world. That is not how Patrice Evra talks. Hmm. I love this game. That's what he says.
Well, yeah, but I mean, have you ever seen The Exorcist? You know what I mean? The devil is capable of projecting different voices onto its subjects. In this case, in the ad, Patrice Evra has been taken over by the devil himself.
Yeah.
And is spreading the devil's words. In this case, drink Casillero del Diablo, a truly beautiful wine.
Yeah, well...
Guys, we have a problem.
That's... Okay.
Guys, we have a problem. We've been asked to do this ad.
Yeah, and I'm really bad at acting. That's a big fucking problem.
The Barcelona documentary is worth a watch, at least for...
Doesn't sound like it, Kent.
Well, but why? Because you think Malkovich's delivery is stilted. I mean, he's not in it very much.
It's more the script. Then they had to go to Liverpool, who had one big advantage. They were playing in their home stadium. Like, come on,
Anfield.
Well, that's part of... Like, I read this... There was an interview on Forbes with, like, the... A couple of Barca... See, this is an in-house production by Barca, right? So they've set up a production company called Barca Studios. So it's not like, you know, like Amazon are doing the documentary with Tottenham or whatever. To be honest, maybe Tottenham also have set up a production company. I'm not sure exactly how that works. When City did it with Amazon, City's was Amazon. Was Juventus on Netflix? Sunderland were on Netflix. You know, so these companies were doing it or organizing it on their side. Whereas Barcelona are like, we're going to do this ourselves because this is what we are now. We are Barcelona Studios. And it seems like they're going to make a film every year. You know, like the director's basically explaining, look, we've seen ourselves as an entertainment company for some time, but whereas our media stuff that we used to put out was a bit like, let's say, CNN, now it's going to be more like MTV. So they've put all the players like on a share of the like a revenue share. Players all paid for participating, and then like you're in their houses. You know, Luis Suarez is cooking barbecue, or Shakira is watching the Liverpool game with her and PK's kids who are wearing their dinosaur pajamas and not paying much attention to the match, while Barcelona concede goal after goal. You know, so there's a lot of access, but I was kind of thinking, this club has some problems. I mean, okay, the directors are talking about it saying, look, it's about storytelling. It's all about storytelling. Storytelling usually means made up stories. Like, you know, in the sense of, this didn't really happen this way, but it looks better this way in the thing. You know what I mean? So the storytelling in this episode, where, you know, Liverpool have an advantage of playing in their own stadium, is... Like, you see Busquets there. Busquets is driving along. He's like, oh, you know, it's going to be amazing. like that stadium, the way they sing the song, you know, the way the fans are so close. It's incredible. Coutinho's like, yes, You'll Never Walk Alone was very emotional. It was like a 12th man. And
why is he talking like John McAvoy?
I don't know. Nelson Semedo, oh, it is a complicated environment. Oh, the English. So they're going on and on about this. And you're like, this is too much. Like they keep going on about the stadium. Like this almost Orientalist fascination with this, what happens here? It's like Pep does the same thing. Mm. You know, it's just a crazy place. Crazy things happen. And you're kind of like, you're building this up too much in your head, lads. It doesn't actually have that much to do with the stadium. They've been playing at that stadium for like more than a century. And they've only got this good in the last year. It's got more to do with the players. It's got more to do with the team you're going to be playing than anything that's... Come on.
What? Liverpool have only got this good in the last year?
Well, yeah, like in terms of being...
Well, they still haven't won their domestic league in which they played 19 games at this stadium for 30 years. So, I mean, the stadium is great and all.
The hologram of Bob Paisley is just...
The stadium's great.
Gaskin.
The stadium's great. But, you know, when Barcelona went there in 2000, was it 2000, 2001, and absolutely destroyed Liverpool in a Champions League group game. Like, one of those... I remember Mark Overmars scored a goal at the end, which was finishing off like a 90-pass move where they toyed with them up and down the field, rolled it in. Actually got a round of applause. It was that... the superiority was that
there
much.
Was football before the 90s again.
What I'm saying is that... It just all the nonsense about the stadium ultimately to me seemed to be deflecting attention away from the actual issue, which was Barcelona's team. Remember, they had lost the previous time against Roma in a stadium which actually couldn't be more different from Anfield. You know, if you're talking about, oh, they're on top of you and they're with you till the end. This is like a stadium with a huge running track. The fans are miles away and often turn on their team if they don't like what they've seen in the first few minutes. But the same thing happened to Barcelona. What was amazing about this was seeing just how bad Messi is at being, like, at doing the Tony Adams, let's say. He's so bad. It was stunningly bad. Like, he is there before the as soon as they beat Liverpool 3-0 in the semi-final, the first leg, they immediately start obsessing about, well, we were three goals up against Roma as well. Oh my God, and we lost. The same thing better not happen again. And like, they just keep saying this to themselves. And then they're in the dressing room before they go out to play against Liverpool. And Messi stands up and they're there. They're all set to go out. This is it. And they've listened to Valverde, well, or not, depending on whether they have to listen to him or not. And Messi goes, all right, everyone, you know, we're going to take a step forward out there. Remember, what happened in Rome was entirely our own fault. It was no one else's. It was all our fault. It can't happen again. It can't happen again. It can't happen. It won't happen. And it can't happen. You're like, stop talking about Rome. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe what I was watching.
It's probably the opposite of what sports psychology would say is a good idea. Like, you're reinforcing all the negative things that have happened in the past.
Lads, this team has crumbled in the past before. Oftentimes, we've conceded early goals and crumbled.
These incidents include the following games. Paris Saint-Germain.
It's like we've crumbled. We've frozen under pressure. We've let down our fans and the people. You know what? It reminded me of Steven Gerrard, weirdly enough. Mm. Like another sort of emotionally negative, like... You know, leader, like a brilliant player who, nevertheless, like the way that he, the most famous example of Gerrard is obviously this does not slip. You know, he managed magically to encode his own destiny in his attempt to be inspirational. But again, even the way that he puts it is putting the emphasis on what could go wrong, i.e., we could slip, rather than, I just don't think that's the way to sort of.
G up the troops.
I think it's kind of the wrong way around. Messi does it as well, you know. And
don't forget, lads, this stadium is particularly difficult to play in.
Yeah, this is very, very difficult. We were having even in the first game, and they were winning 1-0 at halftime. You see him sitting there, and he's like, Valverde is talking. He's just paying no attention to Valverde. He doesn't need to. It doesn't matter. Valverde is telling the team what to do. Messi is not included in that. He knows what to do. But then at the end, he stands up and he's like, guys, you know, we don't want to play. They're very fast. They're very strong. We don't want to play a kind of a to and fro game. You know, we're not used to that. And if we play like that, it's anyone's game. So, but if we play a bit of control, then it's a different thing. Eh? Eh? But like, you're kind of like, stop picking them up. You know what I mean? You are beating them. It just seems very like, here's somebody who's thinking about what can go wrong the whole time. I mean, I guess if you're looking for a documentary to provide some insight, then it gives you that.
Which is interesting, because he doesn't play like that, Messi. So he obviously leads differently to how he plays, like a guy who never thinks. You even see him after these, you know, the odd time they have some disastrous defeat in the Champions League. Okay, he looks a bit gutted, but he's kind of just strolling off like, oh, that game's finished with. I'll rock on to the next one.
Oh, I think he takes the defeats very, very hard these days.
I'm probably phrasing that wrong, but I don't think he never strikes me as somebody who will perform worse in future games because of it. I always just kind of feel like he's quite even in that way. Whereas the way you're describing him, I'm probably quite a positive thinker. Whereas the way you're describing him, he's quite anxious. Maybe he just doesn't like talking to him, but by the end of being the leader, he has to.
I think that's it. Like, I think he doesn't understand other people very well.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't sort of understand the impact of or how to make an impact on a group of people with words. It's not something that he thinks much about, and the way that works in his head, he just has a different brain from everybody else when it comes to football. You can see that obviously in what he does in the field. He's just better at this. It's obvious to him, but it's not obvious to him what should be said. It's a completely different skill. And unfortunately, as the captain of Barcelona, and like the way they talk about him is just like so worshipful at all times. It also falls to him to do this part of it, which he's not just average at. He's utterly useless at this.
Hairdryer is a metaphor for the current of hot air generated by a furious blast of temper.
The hairdryer with which Alex Ferguson was famously associated. He threw a hairdryer, I think, at David Beckham. I don't know that he threw a hairdryer at David Beckham. Is that right?
No, 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 no.
I think it's fair to say Everton are not in the best of shape heading into this Merseyside derby on Wednesday. Let's talk a bit more about that now with the Guardian's Andy Hunter. Andy, thanks very much for chatting today.
No problem.
Can you help us out here a little bit with this Everton situation? Because they're a team that, you know, has quite a few good players there, a couple of big signings like Moyes Keane during the summer. Certainly they don't appear to be, talent-wise, the kind of team they should be languishing down in 17th place and in a relegation battle. So how is it so?
Well, I think there's, you know, Marco Silva's had some bad luck, certainly in terms of his availability of players in central midfield. But they've underperformed massively, some of the players as well, that week in, week out. Gylfi Sigurdsson, for one, has been poor all season. He was probably one of the key players towards the end of last season when he improved. I think they're not in a false position at the moment because, you know, the performances just haven't been good enough. The results haven't been good enough. I think, you know, the VAR is one that was, you know, cost Silva several times. I think going back just to the midfield options, though, I mean, Idrissa Garnett-Gay was a massive player for Everton last season under Silva, and underrated as well. And I think, so obviously he goes in the summer and gets his move to PSG, and the replacement of Jean-Philippe Gbagbon, who after two games tears a thigh muscle and is out until January. And they've since lost Gomez, Schneiderlin's in and out with injuries. Delph has been injured. You know, and Schneiderlin was on the bench yesterday, but you know, he was without four central midfielders really yesterday through injury. And even one of the backup kids was injured, who could have played, Benny Beningame. So that's gone against them and disrupted things. But basically also the lack of a goal scorer. They don't score enough goals. They haven't got this whole thing of not replacing Romelu Lukaku, but it's still coming back to haunt another Everton manager. They haven't got a pedigree striker. They brought Moyes Keane in as kind of one for the future, and he struggled on his few appearances so far. They needed the here and now, not someone for the future, really, this season.
You say, Andy, that they're not in a false position, but I don't know how much attention you pay to the expected points table.
Not too much.
In expected points, in the world of expected points, Everton are seventh. It turns out that they're missing loads of goals they should score, letting in loads of goals they should stop, and generally speaking, coming out, kind of being hard done by in a lot of their games, and should have the performance of a top half of the table team and are practically in the relegation zone. Like, do you have any... first of all, when you hear that, when you hear me say that, are you just thinking, well, I mean, this is clearly, this is imaginary table is clearly an absolute load of nonsense? Or are you thinking, yeah, I can kind of see why that is. There's been a lot of bad luck here.
No, to be honest, I can see why it is. I mean, they're not, the table is so close as well that, you know, a couple of wins and, you know, the situation would be transformed. And it all goes back really to the Brighton game when they hadn't won away from home all season. And then that absolutely ridiculous VAR decision goes against Michael Keane for standing on someone's foot to get the penalty. Everton then go to pieces and lose 3-2. So it does go back to that. And if they'd have won that game, you know, there'd have been something like three wins on the run then, I think, including the Carabao Cup, and then they drew at Tottenham, and then they beat Southampton. So that kind of turned everything against them, to be honest. And yeah, there's been some, even like yesterday at Leicester, you know, the much improved performance as well, I thought. I think not the luck of a team who's lost, you know, the confidence in the manager or the managers, you know, the usual cliche of losing the dressing room or anything like that. They're still playing for them, just not going their way at the moment as well. So yeah, I definitely think there's an element of truth in that. They have been hard done by, or Silva certainly has been hard done by on several decisions. I mean, the Premier League not officially admitted the mistake at the time, but they contacted Everton officials to admit that the VAR decision of Brighton was incorrect, which is no consolation to Silva, really.
Yeah, if you're looking at the fixtures that they have coming up before Christmas, it's Liverpool, Chelsea, Man United away. Then they've got a Carabao Cup game against Leicester. They're at home for that, and at home against Arsenal. Yeah, so five ridiculously tough games. What can Marco Silva possibly do, even if he is in charge for that length of time? What could he do over those five games to convince the board that he is worth sticking with for the remainder of the season?
Well, I think there's no better way of keeping your job as an Everton manager than winning at Liverpool on Wednesday night.
And possibly derailing Liverpool's title bid in this case as well, which, well, not derailing, yeah, you know, but putting a dent in it would be nice for Everton.
I do think, as well, the run of fixtures, certainly being away at Leicester and away at Liverpool, has probably kept him in the job after the Norwich game, when all the fans, who were left in the ground, were chanting, you know, joined in with the Norwich fans singing, you're getting sacked in the morning. I think the board may have looked at the fixtures that were coming up and thought, well, this isn't the time to bring in a new man because he'll be immediately under pressure. Maybe they're kind of hanging him out to dry for the Leicester and the Liverpool games. But if he was to, I'd say, like a performance yesterday, and if he were to follow that up with something at Anfield, then maybe, you know, it shows the stability that the club desperately needs. They should stick by him, because I think the lessons of, you know, the debacle of sacking Ronald Koeman without a better manager lined up or in the bag has kind of taught them a lesson. Not that it should have needed being teaching, because you should not, you know, you don't sack a manager unless you've got a better one lined up. But I mean, the soldiers struggled on for a couple of months until they ended up with Sam Allardyce, who, you know, nobody among the fan base wanted. So I think they've been stung by that, and I think it's basically a case of, you know, we'll persevere for now in the hope that things do turn around. And I think, you know, Everton have played better against the better teams this season, and probably last season, to be fair, under Marco Silva as well. So whilst they are difficult games, and they might be keeping Marco Silva in the job, they're also a great opportunity to turn it around.
Who makes the decision about Marco Silva? I mean, because, you know, it's interesting to hear you say that you feel as though the players haven't lost confidence in him. But the impression that I have is that the fans absolutely have. I mean, maybe I'm wrong about that, but, you know, I can't remember the last time I saw a sort of positive comment about something Marco Silva had done, you know, from an Everton fan. So I wondered, who is actually deciding on what happens here? Because at Everton, obviously, the Farhad Moshiri is the main shareholder, but Marcel Brands is the director of football. Or I'm not sure if that's his exact title, but that's his effective.
Yeah,
he is. Yeah. So Silva was appointed at around the same time as Marcel Brands, I think in May or June 2018. So was Marco Silva Marcel Brands' idea? And
no. No, Marcel Brands officially was appointed before Marco Silva, but the deal for Marco Silva to come in as manager was, you know, way down the line before that happened. And from all accounts, basically, Marcel Brands basically just rubber stamped the move and had the little say on the appointment, really, because it was so far down the line. I think what we'll find out as things pan out with Marco Silva is who is making decisions at Everton, because it seems very confused at the moment. You've got Farhad Moshiri, Bill Kenwright only got a minority stake now, but you know, all the talk of, you know, David Moyes being lined up. If it was to be David Moyes coming in, that would show that Bill Kenwright still has great influence on the board, when perhaps he should not, given that Marcel Brands is their director of football and they put him on the board in January. So basically, he should let the football man make the football decisions. And I think that will become clear over the next, you know, days or couple of games. It seems to be some support to keep Silva and to have stability there, from what Marcel Brands was saying in his interview he did with the in-house media on Friday. It took them 6 days to come out with any sort of backing for Silva after the Norwich game. And even that was pretty lukewarm. It wasn't like a convincing show of support for Marco Silva. It was more of an explanation as to why, what they crave, which is stability and a bit of unity there. So I think, yeah, if Marco Silva was to go after the Liverpool game and David Moyes gets swiftly appointed for the Chelsea games, then that would show that Bill Kenwright still has a big say there, which kind of makes invites questions of what Marcel Brand's role really is.
We're talking here about a hypothetical, obviously, Andy, but if David Moyes was to come back, I mean, this is David Moyes who left Everton in 2013 and since then has had some tough jobs. You know, I mean, I guess the job that he did at West Ham, who didn't get relegated when he was manager, is...
Finished 13th again. I'm going to stick up for my mate here.
Your Premier Sports mate. You know, although West Ham then decided to dispense with him, you know, whether that's a good decision or not. But, he has obviously had some unpleasant experiences to go alongside with keeping West Ham in the Premier League. And it's been a long time. And I kind of get the impression, or sort of had the impression at the time, that when David Moyes left Everton, that the Everton fans were sort of happy enough with that, in the sense that felt as though, yeah, you know, we've got to know each other pretty well. We've had some good times together and all things run their course, and we're happy to see the club go in a different direction now. You know, when Martinez came in, his first season was kind of pretty exciting, actually, as I recall, at Everton. You know, they finish sixth that season, scored quite a lot of goals, played some good football. What I mean essentially is, if they were to go back to David Moyes after 6.5 years, would that be... What do you think the reaction to that would be?
Oh, they're completely deflated.
I think?
I'd say, you know, most Everton fans right now would be against David Moyes coming back. I think it just says, basically, that Farhad Moshiri has just got it spectacularly wrong since he came in. We know that, anyway, by looking at the money that the club has wasted. But I just think if he ends up going back to David Moyes, who, you know, by the time he left Everton, it was the time to go anyway, really. Probably his last season or two, it's all gone a little bit stale anyway, I thought. And, you know, he ran his contract down at Everton and left without compensation. I think it would be an admission of failure, really, by Farhad Moshiri and Bill Kenwright having to go back to him. I can see the merits in them going for him in terms of what he did at West Ham, but then, you know, the other work he has done since Everton doesn't inspire any confidence as to that he's the man for the long term. And they've already made it. You know, Sam Allardyce was always a stopgap appointment. He was never going to stay longer than that, the end of that season. And to be honest, David Moyes would be a pretty similar appointment to that in that respect, and I just think they don't need another stopgap appointment, and that's probably, maybe it's the lack of alternatives is another factor that keeps Silva in a job.
Yeah, it's a moot point, I guess, if Everton do pull off a win against Liverpool tomorrow. Any chance, or maybe a better question might be, how can they go about trying to stop this Liverpool machine?
I think they take some heart from the Leicester performance, and you know, I'd expect them to approach it in the same way, similar tactics as well. I think they need to have just a bit more self-belief going to Anfield, because you know, the better teams, better Everton teams than this one, have gone to Anfield against far worse Liverpool teams than this one with no self-belief whatsoever. So you know, obviously they've come on the back of two bad defeats for different reasons, and going to Anfield, and Liverpool absolutely flying, and Liverpool just have, you know, on Saturday the Liverpool Brighton game. You know, Liverpool win. It was a pretty even game, to be honest, in terms of, you know, open play and that. But, you know, Liverpool just showed that they find different ways to win with the set pieces, 40 set piece goals now, I think, since the start of last season. And they're just, you know, a fantastic and formidable opponent for any team, but especially one with Everton's, you know, dismal record at Anfield. How did they approach? I think they approached it as they did the Leicester game, and they have to, you know, just have to be hard to beat, and you know, a bit more clinical on the when the few opportunities that do come their way. You know, Alisson's a big loss for Liverpool, although Adrian has done really well. You know, whenever he's replaced him this season, so you just they have to hope that they can, you know, capitalize on the, you know, the if Liverpool have heavy legs and the big fixture list coming up. Whether Klopp, you know, rotates a little bit as well. You know, I think, you know, Salah and Firmino haven't been flying particularly of late. Whether he changes things up top, and maybe just, you know, hope to catch Liverpool on a bad night. They don't have bad nights or bad days.
No, even when they do have bad nights and bad days, they seem to find a way to win. But sure, who knows? We'll see what happens. Andy, brilliant. Thanks so much.
No problem at all. Thanks.
It's another European Cup semi-final.
The boys of Liverpool, well, when we safely landed, call myself the fool.
The
blood began to boil. Temper I was Lewis and poured old Aaron's oil. They began abusing her.
Sorry, mate.
Is your Wi-Fi?
What a boy you are.
He knew why I'd come. That's actually my seat.
Wi-Fi workers!
I don't know what you're talking about.
We've actually just been told to sit anywhere.
You're all Wi-Fi workers!
The seat numbers don't count.
Hunt the hare and turn her down the rocky road and all the ways to double a McFarlane.
Mamma mia!
Doesn't take much to buy me off, does it, lads?
How's that?
Well, all David Moyes has to do is
bring in
a few donuts, which he did again this weekend. Terry's chocolate orange flavour. Delish.
I saw the photograph. It did look very nice.
Amazing.
Very, very nice.
Moyes didn't take that bite out of it, by the way, I should stress. That was my own bite.
No,
he wouldn't
I
just hand you over a
I wouldn't have thought
donut,
that now, to be fair on.
So I won't hear a bad word said against him. I didn't ask him about the Everton job. More fool me, but I did ask him about West Ham.
Oh, yeah.
Because that was the game we were doing, and he was linked with the West Ham job as well.
Oh, yeah.
Would you be interested in the West Ham job if it became available, I asked? Trying to, you know, you're
hypotheticals, as Brendan Rodgers would say.
Exactly. So, you know, you can do it. I didn't want him.
For now, I'm happy here at Premier Sports.
What Moyes said was that, of course, I would be interested because I enjoyed my time there, which is less of a dead bat than I expected. I thought I was going to get, I'm not going to talk about, you know, matches, a job with a manager in it. But no, he said, yeah, definitely. But as it happened, Pellegrini pulled off the victory that has saved his job and will probably be in it for another while. I think you get a fair bit of kudos at West Ham if you can beat Chelsea away from home.
Well, who are West Ham playing next? I mean, you know.
You're thinking there might be a couple more defeats away.
Well, they're playing Wolves. They're away to Wolves, a match which I would expect them to lose, at which point Pellegrini's right back where he was. You
know, I was watching Leicester-Everton last night, and I was like, at 1-0 up for Everton, I was like, this is what Ken Early said. As predicted by Ken Early, this isn't a surprise, this is the expected result, given what we know about expected goals over the course of this season.
The expected table. So Leicester expected to do worse than they are, and everything the opposite. And there you go. But you know,
there are limits to the system, as we found out. Thank you. Thanks to Mr. Ian Astro.
World Service members, we will have loads of Premier League coverage during the week. Talk to you tomorrow. Thanks very much for listening to today. Thank you also to the Monday Only members, Monday Only listeners, I should say, who listened today. Feel free to sign up on secondcaptains.com. Thanks, Murph. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, Owen. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Owen. Thank you, Kieran.
on, is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home. They never go home. They never go home, those boys.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.